You're listening to the Ultimate PT Podcast with The Training Room, bringing you the latest news, insights and education from the world of personal training.
Welcome all, welcome along to our Training Room Podcast. Today we are talking with a few well-known athletes from the industry. So we are talking with Liam, Andy, Rich and Chris, with myself, Nick, today. And we're going to be talking about kind of expectations of retirement and things like that within professional sport. I'll get these guys to introduce themselves. I'll start at the bottom of my screen, which is Liam. If you want to introduce yourself for us, please.
Yeah, hi guys. Formerly, Liam Plunkett, professional cricketer. I've been playing cricket professional since about the age of 17. I started up at Durham County Cricket Club, then moved on to Yorkshire, and now in my latter days, I'm at Surrey. I managed to play a few games for England along the way, which has been really, really a proud moment for me, representing my country. And then further down the line, going on to win a World Cup with a good bunch of guys. Probably go down as one of the best games of cricket played. Going down to the Super Over against New Zealand at Lords. So in brief, yeah, a Northern guy who made his way through cricket and have made a good living playing cricket and met a lot of good people and travelled the world. So I class myself as a very fortunate person.
Excellent. Good achievements there, definitely. Rich, what about yourself?
Hi, guys. Rich Burkett. I started at Wasps Rugby Club when I was 18. Straight out of school, straight into Wasps, and had 14 seasons there, finishing up in 2012, 13, I think it was. So a while ago now I finished, which is frightening. But no, we had some very, very successful years, won quite a few trophies, and just had a really, really good time, to be honest. It was the time of my life. When you look back now, you realise how great it was. You're a long time retired. I mean, I can't believe it's, 8-9 years already. But since that, I have got heavily involved in the other side of rugby, the other side of the line, coaching it, both through schoolboy and a bit of club stuff, but mostly schoolboy stuff. Started with a prep school, then moved on to a senior school and ran the program there until August just gone, when life changed slightly. But I'm assuming we'll come on to that.
Yeah, slightly changed. Andy, what about yourself?
Well, it seems like a very long time ago when I was a swimmer. I was an international swimmer, and it's getting on for 39 years, I think, since I've retired. Swimming, as you know, is a very young person sport. I swam competitively from about the age of 11 through to the age of 21. Swimming, again, you have to do quite a lot of training, 18, 20 hours a week. I deferred going to university so I can continue my swimming career. And I finished my swimming career at the top, at the best I could be, I thought. And as I say, it does seem like a long time ago. But since then, I've developed my career in leisure and fitness. Been running all sorts of leisure facilities over the years, from swimming pools to ice rinks to sports centres. But the last 20, 30 years has been mainly focused in the health and fitness industry. So I've had a few senior jobs and a couple of the national chains. But more recently, I've been developing more entrepreneurial businesses, and the last of which I was fortunate to sell to the Bannatyne Fitness Group. So, as I say, swimming is a young person's sport, and it does seem like a long time ago, but I do remember it well, the day that I retired.
Now you're hitting the triathlons.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. The last 10 years, because my children are all grown up now, I've been able to be a bit selfish again and go back to doing quite serious competitive sports. So I compete for GB in triathlon now, and I've won the European Championship in my age group on a couple of occasions and come second in the world, but I still can't work it out. They keep putting me in the age group with the old blokes.
Amazing.
The great thing about triathlon is you never really retire from it. You just go up another age group.
Yeah. And what about you, Chris?
Well, for the record, despite your introduction on the group, I'm definitely not a former professional sports person, so I'm the fraudulent one of the group. But very keen amateur sportsman in my day. So yeah, love sports, and it's actually played a very big part of my life, particularly team-based sport in both rugby and cricket. But my day job, I run the Training Room business as part of the Route to Work group, where I'm CEO. We're a careers development company, an end-to-end careers development company. We help people retrain, redevelop their skills, and then we place them into aspirational careers of their choice through our industry partners. So that's our kind of business model. I spent all of my career in business in one form or another, and for the last sort of 10 years in the kind of careers development, sort of employment services training market. So I guess I can add some good insights around redeveloping your career and kind of what works and what we learn from an industry perspective.
Excellent. I kind of feel like Sue Barker on A Question in Sport or something like that with everyone on the screen. So highs and lows. I want to hear some of your kind of stories. We've got a few of them through that as well, but from your kind of professional career as such, who wants to kick us off with their highs? Rich, let's come to you first. Highs and lows of anything that you come from your career.
Well, I mean, highs is a fairly simple one. I was quite fortunate to be in a team which for 8 years we won silverware every single year. So that was pretty amazing. Winning the Heineken Cup twice was quite special. So that was, like I said, I was very fortunate to be in a team which won a lot, which you look back and you appreciate how incredible that was, because it's the lines are so close between all the teams. To actually get across the line that many times was fantastic. The lows is probably the injuries. That's one of the downsides of being a professional sports person, is that, you know, especially when you're in a game like rugby for 14 years, chances are you pick up a few niggles. And I, you know, did both cruciate ligament in one knee, then the other knee about 10 years later. So that was a, you know, fairly lengthy time off and rehab process. So that was tough mentally. But in hindsight, you look back and you realise that it helped shape you as a person and an athlete as well. So it was, despite being a low, it was actually, I look back now and I see it as almost a positive.
Almost.
Andy,
what about yourself?
I think my high was just feeling like I achieved my potential in my sport, and which sort of culminated in swimming for Great Britain and swimming against the world record holder at that time. And I felt quite proud of myself that I'd achieved my potential. I knew I was never going to be a world star or win an Olympic medal, but I managed to get myself in the GB team and I swam all around the world with my club and things, but that was probably my sort of best moment. I think one of my lows, I think, was when I sort of got to the age of 14, 15, and I was always a very good trainer, being a distance swimmer as well. So I was always a grafter, but I was never quite fulfilling my potential in races. So yeah, at that age, I was still obviously a teenager, so I was contemplating whether to quit the sport. And my parents were saying, look, you either do it properly or you don't do it at all. And I thought that was a bit of a low, but out of that, I suddenly got my shit together, basically, and then started to perform better in races and started to fulfill my potential.
Excellent. It's that extra push, isn't it, sometimes, that decision?
I think, in your head, you need to decide whether you're going to do it well or you're not going to do it at all. And I didn't really want to play at the sport, but I wanted to move up that another level. Because you, as we all know in sport, you go through a series of levels, don't you? You start off being good locally, and then you become quite good at the county level, and then suddenly you're one of the best in the region. But if you want to push on, keep pushing on, and other people sort of retire or pack in the sport as you continue to grow, it's that resilience of hanging in there, and that's obviously the strength in your head, really, which I think really stands you in good stead for the rest of your life.
100%. Yeah, we'll come back to that one, definitely. Liam, what about yourself?
As Rich mentioned, I think the low points in my career have actually made me a better cricketer and a better teammate. So at the time, you feel like you're desperate and you're struggling. At certain points, am I going to play for Durham first team again? Never mind, go back to play for England. So I think when you get to a certain point now, after the high of winning the World Cup, looking back at them dips in form, and maybe when I've always trained hard, but maybe not took my skills as important. It was like a natural talent, and maybe I didn't progress my skills as much as I could. I take that stuff for granted. So all the time I struggled, I now appreciate. Same as Rich as well. Taking that time and that hardship made me a better, stronger character, made me appreciate the time with England. And it's pretty much that same as like play every day as your last. And that's what I did the last 4 years with England when I became number one. I just appreciated being there. And it was the mind shift of my early years of where I'm glad just to take part. So the last 4 or 5 years is turning up, knowing that I can help win a game for England. So for me to get into that space, winning the Cup's obviously massive, the World Cup's massive, but me turning up every day, knowing that I can help win a game and I could be man of the match, I think that was my like highest achievement, to be able to say I can help win a game for England.
Excellent. I was watching a documentary the other day of, I don't know if you've seen it, Tyson and Bruno. Been on telly at the moment with those. And interesting what you're saying with that, because there's one point where Tyson was chatting, and after he got knocked down, he realised he wasn't invincible. He was saying about exactly what you just said. He was taking his skills for granted. Do you think that's quite common for athletes until they get to that kind of knocked down point, that they realise they're not invincible?
I think for me, being a cricketer, you come onto a scene and not many people have seen you. In most sports, like, no one's seen you. No one's looked at any video footage of you. When I first started, there wasn't too much video footage of people coming through the academy. So when you come fresh onto the county scene, you're running in trying to bowl 90 miles an hour, you shock people, and people begin to look at the footage and they're like, we now have to work him out. And as soon as I go from a person just taking all these wickets, people know how to play you, you sort of, your confidence can be shot a little bit. A lot of county cricketers, especially batsmen, the first year or two are like the best years of their career. And then they get found out, this guy can't face a bouncer, he can't face a short ball. Then they get a dip of confidence. And that's when you test someone's character out. Do you go work on the game and come back and you're a better player from it? So it did happen at a younger age for me. People do figure you out.
Rich, looking at you, when you talked there about kind of your injuries, how do you find throughout those times you're there for the team in terms of support? Is it more like emotional support you're there with the team, or how does that kind of work?
Well, actually, funnily enough, the first time I snapped my cruciate, I was very young. I'd only just kind of made it into the team. I was only sort of 20 years old. And as you said, staying involved with the team was absolutely paramount to me as a young player, having just got into the first team, broken through, to then just be to disappear from it would have been pretty tough. So I was actually one of the senior players was injured at the same time. We took over part of the press, I suppose, the in-house press. So we would write reports for the games. We'd do interviews with some of the players, and just to kind of keep ourselves involved in the squad and be part of it. So it was that was really, really important. And to be fair, it was as a 20-year-old, it's something I never would have thought of. But so it was, you know, it was fair play to my, you know, one of the senior guys who took me under his wing and kept me involved in the squad, because that was really important, because it took a while the first time. It was like a 9.5 month layoff, so it could have been quite easy to slip into a pretty dark place, you know, as a youngster thinking I've made it, and then it all kind of gets taken away, you know, within a day. So that was cool.
Did that make you kind of appreciate it all a lot more, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. And also, you know, kept me hungry and keen and just, you know, with the boys. And especially I was just finding my way at the time as a young player. So just for building those relationships with the other squad members was crucial. You know, rugby being such a team game, you know, those relationships and wanting to do it for your mate are absolutely, like I said, completely crucial part of it.
Just
go on, Liam.
if you're not, it's like that injury, isn't it? It can be such a lonely place. If you're, and obviously doing what you do is obviously it's such a smart option to keep you engaged and involved with the team. I mean, being injured or not being selected in the first 11, you can feel so disengaged from that squad and you sort of feel like you're neglected. Maybe not so much in nowadays because of like the mental health side, it's a bigger push now and you're trying to get people engaged. But there was times through injuries where you just feel like you're not part of the team at all. And you might pop up and see the physio and the trainer, and then the first team squad, they're away playing, the second team squad are playing. So if it is bad injuries and you're out for a few months, it can be like a dark place and you sometimes can't see yourself climbing back up to that position, can you? So.
And it must be then quite a hard feeling, like you almost get into that squad, I guess.
If you're what, sorry, Nick?
It must be quite hard to feel like you fit in with that squad if you've been detached from them for a while and things as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think as Liam said, you know, if you especially with long-term injuries, and the end isn't necessarily in sight, having something to focus on and to still be involved with the team is amazing for your mental health, you know. If you're just kind of cast to one side and left to your own devices with the physio and maybe one S&C guy, that's going to be a pretty lonely. So it's all down to individual cultures, I suppose, at clubs, counties, whatever, that they do have those systems in place to support injured players. And I think, like Liam said, it's a lot more... it's focused on a lot more now because we understand better. You know, we understand that it's tough mentally more than physically. So to keep those guys and girls part of the squad is very important.
I think you see it a lot more now as well, don't you? Like, for example, you watch rugby and they've suddenly got the players which are bringing on the water and things like that, you know, to still, I guess, keep them involved and things also.
Yeah.
Definitely Chris, the younger players. The older players are bringing... The older players don't want to be bringing on the water, I'll tell you that.
They used to, I think, didn't they used to go through a phase with a remote control car to bring it on.
Sounds good.
It's interesting, isn't it? You do see sort of, you know, ex-professionals that clearly still crave that team environment, that they do take on those roles. You know, Neil Jenkins always brings on the tea. He's still for Wales, isn't he? For the kicker, because he's still craving that integration and involvement in the team environment.
Chris, I missed yours. I apologise. Your highs and lows.
My highs and lows. Great. Look. It's really interesting listening to this because, I actually think whether you're pursuing, sort of goals in professional sport, whether you're pursuing your goals in your career, actually, the formula for success is very similar. And the things you're describing actually resonate well to, you know, the place of work and what I've gone through in kind of building my career. There's no specific highs that kind of jump out when you ask me that question. But what does immediately spring to my mind? I've been very goal orientated in building my career. I crave accountability and I've craved career progression. I've always set myself those almost, you know, those goals to achieve the next milestone on that journey, very similar to what you're describing, Andy, that, you know, you're working your way up the ladder. And what I was reflecting on the other day, that I enjoy the process of trying to work out how I get to that goal and working towards it a lot more than I do when I actually get to that goal. Yeah. I'd be interested whether others feel like that as well. And you've been working really hard on something, you know, 3-year objective, I'm determined to get there. Yeah. And it's an enjoyable process, but you get there, you go, crack, I actually feel a little bit flat. Right, what's next? Yeah. So when you ask me about highs, I immediately think about the process to get to something. But actually, when you're there, it's not quite what you expect it to be, but that's a formula that's kind of worked for me.
Yeah, it's all about that, I don't know what that saying is. It's something like, isn't it, enjoying the journey, you know, and you know, not just focusing on the destination everything kind of in place there.
And particularly if you're doing it with people. Whether you're a team in sport or whether you're a team in business, working out how you work together and get the best out of each other. To achieve a mutual goal. I have a saying with my team that great teams are balanced teams. If everyone was the same and brought the same skill set, we wouldn't be successful. You need that diversity and breadth of skill sets. And the trick is, as a team, how do you pull that together and head in a common direction? And that's what we focus on in the workplace. I imagine it's very similar in professional sport as well.
Yeah, I mean, a big part of it is trusting, you know, your teammate to help you. You know, it's almost human nature to just do it yourself, you know, but, you know, when you work together, obviously you get so much more done and it can be so much more effective. So that having that trust in each other is so important.
Yeah.
Andy, did you think about retirement as such, or was it just something that kind of crept up on you?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, it did creep up on me because my whole focus was keep progressing and keep trying to improve. But then I could feel myself hitting a bit of a glass ceiling, and I could see some of the youngsters who were maybe bigger framed, big stronger than me, a couple of years younger than me, that were going to start to come catch me. I had a target on my back for a long time. There's a pressure that comes with that. And I could see them coming through. And that's just the natural how life goes as well. And the youngsters tend to be bigger than the slightly older people as well. So it did creep up on me, but I made that decision, right, that's it. I've done that to the best of my ability. Now I need to throw my energies into my career, into my adult career, because I've got to be an independent adult. I mean, swimming, we didn't earn a living from swimming, so we didn't have a nest egg. It was, you know, as I say, a young person sport. So I, you know, to graduate, go and get a job, I needed to throw my energies into that. So it did, it snuck up on me. And I remember this day, I was actually quite upset when I decided to call it a day. And I felt like I was letting people down. I felt like I was letting my coach down. I felt I was letting my parents down and letting myself down. But I knew it was the time to quit, or time to retire is a nice way of putting it. And then to channel my energies into something new, give myself a focus. But I like that point about the journey. And I think, because I do quite a lot of business coaching, and I try to say to people, yes, it's all well and good setting yourself objectives, and us competitive people, we like that because we like to benchmark ourselves against others and we like to strive to achieve, but slow down a little bit and try and enjoy the journey, because, you know, you can enjoy the process more and get a lot of pleasure. And sometimes when you achieve your goal, you can be feeling a little bit flat. You go, okay, well, what now? You know, so that's what I sort of tend to coach now a little bit more is to say, look, enjoy the day, enjoy the moment, get in the moment. Don't be so hurried to move on.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think with everything that's going on in the world at the moment, I think a lot of people are taking more note of that, I think, at the moment. Rich, what about yourself?
In respect to what? Sorry.
Sneak up on you, retirement? Did you have things planned?
No, it did. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I had 14 years. So from a rugby point of view, it wasn't too bad, especially playing in my position. I was starting to feel quite battered. I was 32, going on 33, and my neck kind of gave up on me. Essentially, bulging discs and prolapsed, all sorts of bits and bobs in there. It meant that I had to call it a day. So it was forced on me. I probably had another couple of years if I'd pushed it. But in all honesty, I was, like I said, I was feeling pretty battered. It's a fairly attritional spot, playing second row, back row, and playing a lot of rugby. I think my last two seasons I'd played over 30 games per year, which was quite a bit. So yeah, it was forced on me, but at the same time, I did feel like maybe it was time to start thinking about the next stage, because I was getting a bit bashed.
Mm-hmm. And Liam, obviously you're not retired as yet, but is it something you've been thinking about? Not only soon, but you know, you've got plans in place.
I thought you were going to say, what's it like being retired? I was going to, no. I was about to fire back at you. yeah, I think so. Obviously, the training room and after the World Cup, it was something I wanted to do. Quickly going back to that, when you reach your goal, I think, fortunate, I've won medals with Durham, Yorkshire. You always think about winning that trophy, but the day after, someone's gunning for you because the pre-season starts with other people. So it's like after the World Cup, it was probably the most depressed I've been for like a week, because it went from the World Cup win to you waking up and you celebrated, and the guys had to get ready for a test match against Ireland. I'm not sure they were that like flying up, like ready to play that, because it's just the World Cup and everyone got spread around, and I'm sat at home on the sofa in my underpants watching Netflix 2 days later, and it's like, oh. And then get yourself, and then you have to go back to play Surrey, and without being like, I'm not saying that it's a little bit low standard, but it's still the highest quality playing at the Oval in front of a packed crowd, but you're still living in that of, well, I've achieved my goal, like, but I've won the World Cup. And all of a sudden you think the door should be open for you. I should be getting this, I should get that, but it's nothing really. That goal's met, and then you have to, well, what am I going to do next? And it's so important to like that process, love the process. I'm going back to playing like 4-day cricket now after playing so much white ball cricket, and it's your action have to change. You get found out in red ball because it swings more. So now I'm going through the process of changing my action a little bit. And like, maybe because I'm a little bit older in the game, I actually like it. I like working out. How do I change this? And I don't get too stressed if I hit the side net with a ball. It doesn't look great, but in my mind, like, I'm working on stuff and the season's not ready yet. In terms of the next step, yeah, obviously the training room, I did level 2 and 3. I've done my level 4, like Olympic lifting as well, but I'm not sure how much I will use that going forward. I would just like to fill my locker with as much tools as possible, really, my toolbox. I'm doing some cricket coaching and a little bit of sports psychology, just trying to get as much as possible as I can. And I think eventually it will lead on to coaching. There's some stuff happening, the USA cricket, where my wife's from. I'm help structuring the Philadelphian cricket team, which is a minor league. So I think potentially that's what I'll end up doing. Like you guys in your sport, I feel like I'm not like I've got a, but it feels like that's been my college, that's my study. I've got a degree in cricket. So I feel like I'm a decent piece of people's person. I can speak to people. I want to help youngsters come through. And the retirement situation, I'll help people along the way, but it's at that point where, well, you need to be good enough to get past me. That's how I feel right now. And as soon as people start getting past me and I feel like I'm turning up to make the numbers, and then I'll move aside. But right now I still feel like I can take a run out to win a game, take a 5 for a score, quick 50. Well, I still feel that passion and the burning, and then I'll play, but my body could give up on me at any time, so we'll see.
I know Rich and Lynn, you guys both kind of linking a little bit with the strength and conditioning side as well. And you mentioned there your Olympic lift, Lynn. Do you find that helps with the being able to keep playing for longer? I know, Rich, you were coming in, well, was it, did you say 2012-ish? They were starting to really kind of push through a lot more of that. And
To be honest, I mean, I'd say we owed a lot of our success to strength and conditioning. When we had a new strength and conditioning guy called Craig White, who came in sort of 2000, 2001. And you look at why rugby is like it is now is because this guy came into Wasps and he changed the way we looked at how the game should be played in terms of the fitness we did. And it was specific to rugby. You know, the way we trained, we would be doing short bursts, massive efforts, have a breather, go again and repeat and repeat. So it wasn't there was no endurance work essentially. Whereas I remember, you know, kind of when I first started at Wasps, we were doing sets of 6, 150 meter sprints, you know, like 6 sets of 6. And it would be, you know, we'd all be knackered by the end of it, but we'd get to the end of it and think, and how that transferred into the game. Well, it didn't, you know, at no point did I ever run 150 meters flat out, then have a breather for 30 seconds and then run, but that just didn't translate into rugby. So suddenly Craig came in and changed all our training. We did a lot more gym work. He brought in what was called power endurance at the time, but was basically like CrossFit, essentially, like big efforts, not a lot of rest, go again, off the floor, go again, you know. And funnily enough, that transferred onto the pitch and we started destroying teams in the last 20 minutes, 25 minutes, because we would just steamroll them. You know, we weren't necessarily more skillful, but physically we were on a different level. And that was a massive part of our success. And then obviously teams started to catch up because they all got in their strength and conditioning guys who would know the same stuff and follow our lead essentially. And then you have to adapt again, don't you? But yes, I mean, the strength and conditioning side of things played an enormous part in the success we had for, 10 years.
About yourself, Liam?
Through my career, I don't feel like I've ever been the most talented, but I've always enjoyed working hard in terms of the fitness side of things. I think my first ever yo-yo or beep test, what they ran back in the day, I think they still do the yo-yo, but I was terrible. And I think I tripped myself up on the level 8 and pretended I was injured or something like that. And from that period, I thought I need to get serious. And that's when I would start running and training. And cricket, when I was 17, 18, it was still a new thing. It's only now when you watch TV, there's athletes playing cricket the last few years where you have to take it serious. And it's obviously rugby's more physical and stuff, but it's each to their own. It's cricket specific fitness and vice versa. But yeah, I love it. I mean, people might not like me saying it, but I actually like the training side better than the cricket sometimes. And I do. I feel like I've always enjoyed that side. But doing like the courses and stuff, it's appreciating what training you need for sort of like for cricket. You need to stick to this. There's no point me going out, which I did in isolation, just cycling for miles and miles and come to cricket and then pull both hamstrings or whatever. So it's S&C is something I love and I'm passionate about, and hopefully going forward I want to do coaching. Hopefully I can bring that into as well. It's something I'll always have with me, and I'm sure when I retire I'll probably end up doing something like Andy, some triathlons or something like that.
Yeah. How's your conditioning, strength conditioning type training, Andy, for your triathlon? That's a massively almost diverse set of skills with those as well.
Yeah, it's still very much an endurance sport. It's interesting, if I look back, when I was swimming as a youngster, we probably weren't very well advanced with nutrition or strength and conditioning. And again, I was an endurance swimmer, so. But I probably could have massively benefited back all those years. But now, in the last sort of 10 years since I've been doing triathlon, and even at the moment, I've stepped up my strength and conditioning because my engine is still strong. I'm 59 years of age. I'm 60 on Thursday. My engine is still strong, but my chassis is starting to fall apart a bit. We all get, not all, but it's not quite common for fellas in their 50s get problems with their spine, and I've had problems in my upper spine, in my lower spine. So I'm almost doing an hour of spent strength and conditioning every day, even though I'm an endurance, dare I say, aging athlete. So I think it's really relevant. And a lot of us in our age group are sort of rewriting some of the medical books as well, because we're doing stuff that, 20 years ago, you wouldn't think that someone 60 would be able to go and do what we do. So there is a lot of evidence to say that if we want to prolong our career and prolong our exercise and being able to be competitive, is to look after the body. Don't just focus on the cardiovascular system, focus on, because I think we start losing muscle as well. We start, and some of our smaller muscles start getting lazy, and then some of our stronger muscles dominate, and it sort of pulls us a little bit out of line. So if we can bring ourselves just back in shape a little bit, we can eke out a few more years.
Absolutely.
That's the theory anyway.
Liam, what do you think the hardest part will be about when you finally hang up your bat and your ball?
I think it's obviously competition. I think I thrive at my best against the best opposition. Playing against someone, if you're going out to bat at number 8 or whatever, and you're facing someone who's born 95 miles an hour, as much as it's a bit intimidating and stuff, like, that's when I feel at my best. Mm. Or bowling against someone, obviously I'm not sure you guys know cricket, but bowling someone like AB de Villiers, who you can take you apart any day of the week, and then you get him out. That's what you play for, right? To get that match-winning wicket, or to change the game on his head. To hit a 6 to win a game or take a catch, I think that's what I'll miss. Hopefully, obviously going into coaching, like Rich as well, I'm also passionate about that. And I think when the time comes, I'll be ready to move on. Finishing with England a couple of years back, I'm happy that we're obviously finished with that World Cup, and I'm excited to be with Surrey now, and I want to finish the next few years, I'd love to win a trophy in red ball cricket. I haven't played hardly any red ball cricket. That's how I first started with Durham and Yorkshire, winning red ball cricket. And I feel like I owe the game my time in red ball cricket a little bit, because it's so easy going down the white ball route and playing T20s and stuff. But I make myself available for that. I'd like to put some hard yards in the next few years and try and win a red ball comp. But I think I'll be ready for when the time comes. I'm looking forward to the transition.
Yeah.
So hopefully.
Yeah.
Rich, what about yourself? What did you find hardest about retiring from the sport?
Initially, the hardest part was not being part of a team. Was essentially you're on your own. And you've got your wife, and at the time I had a young baby, but it's I was pretty grumpy, and I don't think she liked me very much. just desperately missed being that changing room banter, you know, just being with your teammates. There's nothing like it, and it's kind of all I'd known. You know, from even at school, you know, I was always playing team sports, you know, so from, you know, 7 years old to being a team, and that's what you live for as a kid as well, going playing with your mates on a Sunday. And but I had that every day as a player at WASP. And when you combine that with success, suddenly it's incredible. So it was a bit of a shock. It really was a shock. And fortunately, with the role I ended up, I started in, I had a group of, there was five other members of staff, and it was an all-male staff PE department, actually, at the school I started at. So there was, it was a bit of a replacement in terms of, you know, something like that changing room environment. So that was fortunate, because that I found quite difficult. I think, as Liam said, you know, talking about missing those big occasions, that's definitely what I look back, what I think about now. And when I see a big game on TV, that kind of brings back memories, and you go, wow, that was amazing. That's what I miss. You know, that's not what you don't get. I've been lucky with the coaching side of things that I've done. We've had some success, we've won some things, but it's not quite the same. It's, you know, it's fantastic, and you're buzzing for the players. But it's not quite the same as winning it yourself, and, you know, running out to a packed stadium with 80,000 people cheering for you. There's nothing to replace that. So that's, you know, but I've had it. So that, you know, I thank my lucky stars that I did.
Yeah. Excellent. So you found then the wife didn't quite whip the towel in the showers quite as well as the rest of the team. Is that right?
I wouldn't care for what I say.
But you, Andy, so you transitioned through from the swimming into sort of more leisure industry and working that way. How did you find that transition?
Yeah, I mean, swimming, as we know, is probably more of an individual sport, although in your swimming clubs and swim teams, and when you swim for GB, they try and create a team environment, but you don't quite get that camaraderie that you get and say team sports such as rugby and cricket, I guess. But we do all sort of, you know, support each other when we're racing and training. So that we do try and create that. I mean, what happened with me is because I was still in my early 20s, I was able to go and play. I'd always been quite good at sport at school, so I could go and play football but I wasn't very good. That was a problem. And you know, going from being an international swimmer to being a sort of just playing local park football was a bit of a rude awakening. But and also when I was playing in my team, I could see that, and I loved the banter even on a Saturday afternoon football. But a lot of our guys in the team didn't have that same desire to win as I did, being a competitive, really competitive person. So I had to sort of just back off a little bit and just realise that I wasn't very good at this football. I could still enjoy it, and I don't expect too much from my teammates. They weren't going to be as competitive as me. So you just have to adjust, you know, and set yourself new challenges. And I think you treasure your memories as well. And no one ever can take those memories away from you and those experiences. And they're just fabulous, you know. And you look back and you go, well, that probably was the best time of my life. But you can still, you know, plan that transition, start to think about what you might going to miss and what you might need to put in place to replace the buzz that you got out of playing sport at such a high level.
But that's key as well, isn't it, for you guys, to find a replacement, find something that you can channel that competitive side into it. Do you find yourself competitive with everything? Like, even if you had a game of pool down the pub, if we can ever go to a pub again, do you still find you're that competitive with everything? Go on, Liam.
I guess not really. I mean, in terms of like, if it comes to like fitness testings, I'm always make sure I've trained and I want to win them. So I guess in terms of that, but that's related to my sport, because I want to be the top and want to be the fittest I can be to play cricket. I know if I'm fit, light, strong, powerful, it can help me perform on the field. But in terms of like playing golf, yeah, I want to win, but like I don't cry into my cornflakes if I get beat, you know? So it's, I like to be good at more stuff. Like if I get beat at stuff, it is what it is. I'm not like in terms of I have to win everything. No, like it humbles you, doesn't it? Playing a different sport or different people. I just play to have fun. I feel like I spend that much time standing around in a field. I want to play golf. I don't want to take it too serious. So like, I just want to enjoy it, relax, and enjoy it for what it is.
What about you, Rich?
Yeah, when I finished playing rugby, you do miss that competitive buzz, and so you kind of search for what else could it be. And I started with golf. quickly found out that you've got to spend a lot of time doing it, and you've got to be amazing to be anywhere near. As in my head, you know, I want to be professional, you know, that's kind of almost what it is. And then when you actually do it, you realize this is really hard and I'm not very good. So I need to, it's a bit of a reality check, I guess, but you know, I enjoyed it. But I've done the classic rugby player thing, now gone into cycling in a big way, and it's one of those things that you can control, and I have I'm keen being, you know, schedule, training plans, the lot. You can track everything, you feed your competitive spirit with things like Strava and Swift, you can race and all sorts of things. So that's a lot of fun. And it's like I said, it feeds my competitive nature. I'm never going to be amazing at it because I'm far too heavy. And at the end of the day, it's power to weight. And if you're 100 kilos, it definitely doesn't help you on a bike going up a hill.
No, but find ones with more downhills and you'll be fine.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah. Downhill's quick. But it's, I don't think I could ever just not do anything competitive. It's just in me. It's in me. It just runs through me. I always want to try and push myself, and just whether it's, you know, I don't have to be, like I said, the greatest cyclist in the world winning the Tour de France, but I like to challenge myself and push myself. And I like training, as Liam said earlier, I quite enjoy training. I like going in the gym. I like getting on the bike, working hard, and it's part of me. So I don't think I'll ever stop doing it.
I think cycling's a thing for sportsmen, is it? Like, I love it, but I got told when you're back in Harrogate, like, don't go on your bike because you get ready for cricket. So I made sure I took it to pieces and put it in the loft so I wouldn't be tempted to jump on it. It's a lot of cricketers are doing that. There's a lot of, like, a lot of the PCA, the cricket is, like, I think in October, it's London to France. They've done a lot of the stuff. I think, is it Ollie Phillips as well does a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah,
the cycling stuff.
Yeah, Ollie enjoys it. I mean, on just Saturday just gone, I was part of the I joined in with the Head for Change ride, which was Alex Popham, and a lot of rugby players on there. Mike Tindall was doing it, and there were quite a few other sportsmen and women all getting involved. It's very accessible. Cycling is one of those sports that it's not, you know, I think pro cyclists probably hate me for saying this, but it's not very skillful. It's just all about engine and, you know, power to weight ratio, essentially, at the end of the day. So it, like I said, it's very accessible. Anyone can do it, jump on a bike and just really get stuck in.
I think with cycling, what might suit you guys well is you're professional athletes, because you've got the right mindset. You're able to focus on that kind of thing. I did cycling a few years ago, and I did the London to Paris bike ride and things like that. And I just found it boring. And I jumped on the bike, and all I was thinking was, when can I get halfway so I know I'm on the way home? That's all I think of. I couldn't get into that mindset of just focus, and this is what we're doing, and kind of separate yourself out. And I think you kind of need that.
It can get, I got the cycling bug for a bit. I guess you can get a team element from it as well, can't you? And camaraderie, good excuse for a weekend away with the lads, either golfing or cycling. So you can get a good buzz from it. It's interesting to see on the cricketers, because Matt Price set up his career post cricket was setting up a pro cycling team, wasn't it?
Wow. Yeah, he's done really well for himself, actually. He's always trying to sell me some. Flog me some gels or something like that.
I did the big charity bike ride at the last Ashes tour, it was the Investec Ashes Challenge, and Darren Goff was our celeb cricketer with us. For 4 days, we cycled for all the test grounds. So the first day was Old Trafford to Trent Bridge over the peaks, which was quite a challenge. But Matt Pryor given Goffey one of his team bikes, so he had the best bike on the trip. But it was great fun, 100 people out, and it was for 4 days cycling around Britain, great fun.
Yeah. There's quite a few. A lot of the charities do. I mean, a lot of the guys do every year in October, and it is I think a lot of the county grounds from Durham all the way down to Sussex. I think is it? Or I only know last year because everyone turned up, and there's a guy. Matthew Coles had turned up with a mountain bike and trainers. I mean, he took a while to get around, but you guys not fully prepared for that.
Excellent. Right. Perfect. I think we are pretty much there. I did ask you guys, I don't know if you've got them or not. I hope so, because I've just looked like a bit of an idiot wearing this all the way through. But if you've got, have you got any of your merch, any of your special rewards that you've got throughout?
What have we got?
Oh, nice.
Look at that. Wow. That's impressive.
That is smart.
Yeah.
You should have worn that all the way through.
that was a couple of years back when they got all, it was a Lord's dinner. So this is when everyone who played for England, we had a dinner and everyone got given one of those. So it was kind of cool, obviously, with your test number, ODI, and your T20 number. So it's something you're going to cherish along with the other caps you get, but it's kind of cool that you've got all three numbers on this, and it's something, it's a keepsake that you can frame later on.
Yeah, brilliant. Rich, what about yourself?
My wife got mine all framed.
That's cool.
Look at that.
Really cool.
Yeah, it's just cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. I dug out my old GB, just my GB.
Oh, nice.
GB track suit.
Look at that.
Which is pretty significant compared to the other two guys. But as I say, that was my Olympic gold medal, and so I've kept it as a keepsake all these years.
Awesome.
Brilliant. Chris?
How can you compete? But I do have, up on the wall there, I do have my one and only appearance at Twickenham.
Oh, wow.
An amateur rugby cup final. We had a curtain raiser before Bath versus Lee Tykes and the Power Gen. So yeah, there are a few more empty green seats than what you'd have been, Rich. But it started filling up towards the end when they're coming in for the main game. So yeah, that's my proudest sporting moment, I think.
Excellent. This is my first place medal, I think, from about 1990, from my very first martial arts competition. And when I got on the minibus, my mum said to me, "Don't come back unless you've got a first place medal." I did. Unfortunately, I had to come back. So,
yeah. Old memories, isn't it? Good memories.
That's it. They all count. They all add up, don't they?
Yeah.
Nick, just before you sort of finish, I was just sort of reflecting on some of the things the guys were saying there. And what's written is that you're in professional sport. You're in your path, and it probably feels very closed off to other things that go on out there. And you pick up obviously on how do you replicate, how can you recreate, and that sense of always kind of striving to find things, but almost accepting you can never kind of recreate what you had. And actually, I think what's interesting, a lot of things you've kind of described and what you talked about, I think you can. Of course, you'll never reach the exact feeling that you have in professional sport. But I think if you understand those things that drove you in professional sport, I think you can match that into new careers and new career pathways. I genuinely do. And the other thing, I as a, in running a business, I look at the skills that you develop in, elite sport, and they are so transferable. You read a lot about sports people just sort of, you almost sort of stay within the tram lines of that sport. So how do I create a career, you know, out of cricket? How do I create a career out of rugby? How do I create a career out of swimming? And Andy, you've kind of taken that to a new level, haven't you, and expanded properly into kind of the leisure and fitness industry from a business perspective. But yeah, I wouldn't constrain yourselves to thinking the world that you know and what you come from, because your skills are so transferable and so employable and can be applied in so many different ways.
Yeah, I think what sport taught me is a sort of quite a high level of resilience and determination, because as we know in life, it's not all plain sailing, and we meet challenges and we have low points. But you know, what I look back on in my sporting career, my swimming career, is that sort of that resilience where I can bounce back and maybe take a day, lick my wounds a bit, but now bounce back and come back even more determined. And that's that, I think it can make you not tougher, but you know, you can. And I think in a career, it's not always about inspiration. It's a little bit more about perspiration. So if you've proved to yourself that you can do it in sport, you can do it in other avenues in your life. I do think it teaches you a lot that you take with you and stays with you forever. And you also pass it on to your children. You pass it on to other people that you coach. You know, you can have a big impact on other people's lives.
Absolutely. And those social skills as well that you guys all include within working with teams is just phenomenal as well. Guys, brilliant. Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us. And enjoy the rest of your day. It's been brilliant. It's been really, really good. I'd love to just chat more, and I really want to hear again just experiences on the field and things like that as well. That's what I'd like to hear. So hopefully we can catch up again on future podcasts.
Yeah, pleasure.
Excellent. Thank you very much, guys.
Nice to meet you all.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Cheers.
Check out The Training Room on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Or visit thetrainingroom.com for more information on our health and fitness courses. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we hope you tune in again next time.